Looking back on the week that was with a razor wit, irreverent humour and profound political and cultural insights, this is the James McPherson Show.
Former Australian Prime Minister Karen Rudd will lead a new government agency to approve cartoons before they go to print. Mr. Rudd will monitor cartoons while warning about rising sea levels from his beachfront mansion in Queensland. Cartoons are the great moral challenge of our generation, Mr. Rudd told his 6 million TikTok followers. My name is Karen and I'm from Queensland and I'm here to help. But mostly, I'm here to rage against News Limited. Mr. Rudd came to national attention this week when he complained that a cartoon in The Australian pointing out Joe Biden's racism was racist, because it pointed out Joe Biden's racism, and this was racist. How on earth does a Murdoch editor justify publishing a cartoon about something or other when outrage, Murdoch is evil, mouthpiece for Trump, News Limited ruined my prime ministership, both times, gutter standards, racism, Mr. Rudd tweeted. Mr. Rudd dismissed suggestions that the cartoon mocking Joe Biden should have been read in context. You can tell those D-heads in the newsroom to just give me simple cartoons. I've said this before, an exasperated Mr. Rudd complained to staff in a video that was leaked to the media. Tell that bloody cartoonist. The idea that cartoons should be read in context just complicates it so much, you know? How can anyone do this? It's enough to make a man pull his hair out or eat his earwax. Earwax. Mr. Rudd told a BBC panel on cartoon change that he alone would now approve all cartoons before they went to print. He hoped that under his newly released cartoon reduction policy, Australia would be cartoon neutral by 2030. To do this, we need to encourage reusables, he said. Reusables included any cartoons from the past that showed Mr. Rudd in a flattering solar light or that put the wind up Mr. Rudd's enemies. Quote, Australians saw firsthand last summer that Trump is more ferocious and more frequent, and our natural wonders, identity politics, the great state-controlled narrative, our precious grievance industry, are now at risk if we continue to pump disagreeable cartoons into the political atmosphere, he said. Mr. Rudd accused those who insisted that cartoons were simply naturally occurring speech of being cartoon deniers. Cartoons are not just a cartoon challenge, he said. Cartoons are an economic challenge, a social challenge, and actually represent a big challenge on the overall question of national security. In a letter to the Australian Press Council, Mr. Rudd complained that the Australian cartoon mocking Joe Biden, quote, encourages ridicule and resentment towards people of colour, and reverberates not only among minority communities in Australia, but it also reflects poorly on Australia's image around the world. Editors at The Australian are a bunch of racist rat effers, just like those Chinese rat effers, he said, in comments that encouraged ridicule and resentment towards Asians and that reverberated not only among minority communities in Australia, but also reflected poorly on Australia's image around the world. Welcome to the James McPherson Show. Great to have your company. Kevin Rudd, is he really stupid, as he expects us to believe, or is he just a rank opportunist who manipulates the serious issues of race and sex in order to score cheap political points? The former Prime Minister was all huff and puff when triggered by a cartoon in The Australian that depicted Joe Biden introducing his presidential running mate, Kamala Harris, as a little brown girl. The Democratic presidential nominee was shown saying, "It's time to heal a nation divided by racism." In the next scene, Johannes Leek's cartoon shows Biden standing in front of Kamala Harris saying, "So I'll hand you over to this little brown girl while I go take a lie down." This was enough to enrage Kevin Rudd, who, engaging Twitter before first engaging Brain, ranted, and I quote, "So how on earth does Murdoch editor Chris Dorr justify publishing a racist and sexist cartoon about a US senator who's likely to be the next vice president of the United States? Murdoch is a Trump mouthpiece, but this is gross, even by Murdoch's gutter standards," end quote. Well, fair shake of the sauce bottle, Mr. Rudd. It's a miracle you were able to run the country for even an hour when you evidently cannot comprehend a simple cartoon. The cartoon was not mocking Kamala Harris. Harris was not even its object. Leek's clever cartoon used Joe Biden's own words to point out how racist and sexist Joe Biden was. Yes, it was Biden who said, after selecting Harris as his running mate, that, and I quote, "This morning, little girls woke up across this nation, especially black and brown girls, who so often may feel overlooked and undervalued in our society, potentially seeing themselves in a new way as the stuff of presidents and vice presidents," end quote. Joe, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black Biden, has a long history of racial and sexual gaffes. This was merely the most recent, and cartoonist Leek rightly called it out. But of course, Mr. Rudd knows all of this. The real outrage is that Mr. Rudd's caricature of the Australian public presents you and I as people so stupid we'll mistake his facts outrage for moral virtue. Even worse, Mr. Rudd manipulates the public's genuine concerns about racism in a bid to mobilise them for his own ends. His personal vendetta against News Limited, whom he blames for his failed prime ministership. Prime ministerships. Not to be out-virtued, other Labor and ABC figures, but I repeat myself, joined in. Shadow Attorney General Mark Dreyfus tweeted from on high, quote, "If the Australian has any respect for decency and standards, it must apologise immediately and never again publish cartoons like this." Sure, Mr. Dreyfus. When Joe Biden told a black radio host that if blacks don't vote for him, they ain't black, you were silent. When Joe Biden said that poor kids are just as talented as white kids, you were silent. When Joe Biden described Barack Obama as, and I quote, "the first mainstream African-American who is articulate and bright and clean," end quote, you were silent. But when a cartoon in The Australian points out Joe Biden's racism, you suddenly find your anti-racist voice by screaming racist at The Australian and thinking we're fool enough to take you seriously. What is indecent, Mr. Dreyfus, is your cynical manipulation of the public conscience, trying to leverage our concerns about racism for your political point scoring. Everyone who has ever been the victim of actual racism ought to be appalled that civic leaders engaged in such cynical antics. Not to be outdone, fellow Labor MP Andrew Lee tweeted, "Racism has no place in Australian public life. The Australian should pull today's offensive cartoon off their website and issue an immediate apology." Issue an apology? For what? For quoting the 2020 Democratic nominee? ABC News breakfast host Michael Rowland, referring to the cartoon, tweeted, "I feel really sorry for those good journalists when their stories appear in the same paper as this. Shameful." Well, the rest of us just feel sorry that our taxes go towards a national broadcaster that doesn't even pretend to be fair-minded, employing journalists who prefer to massage the news rather than to report it. On August the 9th, the Women's Organisation, a group dedicated to advancing women's rights, tweeted a quote from actress Emma Watson. Watson was quoted as saying, "If you want to run for Prime Minister, you can. If you don't, that's wonderful too. Shave your armpits, don't shave them. Wear flats one day, heels the next. We want to empower women to do exactly what they want." Well, that's optimum feminism right there. Women can choose what shoes they wear. Women must be relieved to know they have Emma fighting for them. The only problem, of course, is that she's fighting battles won decades ago by other women. And it's great that Emma insists women can run for Prime Minister if they want to. This will be enormously encouraging for Australia's Julia Gillard, England's Margaret Thatcher and Theresa May, New Zealand's Jenny Shipley, Helen Clark, Jacinda Ardern, Canada's Kim Campbell, India's Indira Gandhi, and Israel's Golda Meir. But the real problem is that while Emma insisted on August 9 that she wants to empower women, she had tweeted on June 11 that, and I quote, "Trans people are who they say they are and deserve to live their lives without being constantly questioned or told they aren't who they say they are," end quote. So it's difficult to take seriously Emma's passion for women's rights when she defines a woman as an idea inside a man's head. How can women be empowered if they are no longer an identified group? If you believe, as Emma does, that men can be women if they think they are women, then women have been magically not marginalized or abused throughout history because of their sex, because their sex isn't real. According to Emma, women can run for prime minister, but they can't have women's sex-based rights. Women can wear heels or flats, but they can't compete in sex-segregated sports. Women can do exactly what they want, but they can't say single-sex spaces make them feel safe. She wants to empower women to do exactly what they want, but if what they want is to play on a sports team with only biological females, they better not speak out because this empowerment stuff only goes so far. Emma doesn't think sex is real, so how can she hope to promote female achievement? The problem with Emma Watson is that her reputation and career as a feminist and an intellectual has been built on her role in Harry Potter films. She and you need to remember that. Actress Jodie Turner-Smith gave birth at home rather than in a hospital because of systematic racism, according to a report in the New York Post last week. The black British actress told the Post, quote, "We had already decided on home birth because of concerns about negative birth outcomes for black women in America. According to the Center for Disease Control, the risk of pregnancy-related deaths is more than three times greater for black women than white women, pointing, it seems to me, to systematic racism." End quote. Turner Smith could have given birth by a river to be more culturally attuned, but I digress. Frankly, I'm surprised it's taken 2 months since the death of George Floyd for someone to finally bring systematic racism in the maternity ward to public attention. I say that because I well remember the day after I was born and placed in the recovery room with the other newborn babies. The N-word was just flying around the room. Of course, I only heard it because I was in the front row. All the minority babies were made to lay in cribs up the back. I'll never forget lying on the white sheet they provided for me and thinking, wow, they're not even trying to disguise their racism. But before we defund hospitals, we might want to consider that the pregnancy-related death rate for black women may be due to factors other than white supremacist nurses lurking menacingly in postnatal suites. Asthma-related deaths are three times greater for African Americans than for whites. Does this mean asthma is racist? Perhaps the inhalers discriminate. Diabetes-related deaths are also more common in blacks than in whites. Defund insulin. Blacks have a much higher rate of teen pregnancy, which is a factor in higher rates of death during childbirth. But rather than call attention to this social problem, it's much easier just to, you know, make stuff up. I once had a bad case of indigestion brought on by systematic racism and eating too fast, but mostly I blame systematic racism. What exactly is Jodie Turner-Smith, who is married to former Dawson's Creek star Joshua Jackson, suggesting when she says systematic racism in hospitals is responsible for black women dying in childbirth? Are hospitals turning away black women? Are midwives targeting black mums for death? If we want to talk about blacks dying in pregnancy, we might have a conversation about the fact that blacks represent 13% of the American population and yet account for five times as many abortions as whites. Abortionists, who typically set up in poor black neighborhoods, kill 1,000 black babies every day. This is the one form of actual systematic racism in America and the only form of systematic racism no one wants to talk about. It's not Planned Parenthood killing black babies every day, but hospitals assisting black children to be born in a safe professional environment that is the real race problem in America. Sure, just don't tell Beyonce, who reportedly took over an entire hospital floor when she last gave birth. As for home births, a report published in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology in February found that nearly 14 newborns per 10,000 live births died following planned home births, more than four times the rate for babies born in hospitals. So when you endanger the life of your newborn in order to engage in postnatal virtue signaling, You've done nothing to end imagined systematic racism, but you've certainly proved that endemic stupidity is a thing.
Vice magazine published an article on August 14 headlined, "Dear White Vegans, Stop Appropriating Food." The article said, "Veganism is going through its own racial reckoning that's a long time coming, considering white vegan influences have appropriated traditional foods forever." It goes on to quote Afia Amoko, who complains that she doesn't see herself reflected in the vegan community, which she says is dominated by wealthy white women. They often touted recipes, African peanut stew or Asian stir fry, that rely on racial stereotypes, she said. One, they don't look like you, and two, they're appropriating your food. Those are ways to turn racialized people away. Well, there's Amoko's problem. She's racialized. Maybe if she was less racialized and a little bit more, you know, human, she'd be able to look at food without feeling oppressed. When you can't think of a single thing more racist than some cracker eating a tofu dumpling, you're the problem. When you feel like vegetables and salad have that microaggression of racism built into them, you're no longer eating the plants, you're smoking them. If Amoko has her way, we won't be able to eat anything without first making certain that what we are eating was first eaten by someone who shared our skin colour. Or else. Come to think about it, there's a Japanese noodle restaurant in my city that serves kimchi. I don't know whether to woke-splain to them why this is wrong or just set the place on fire. Vice magazine said that Amoko, a vegan Instagrammer and blogger based in Toronto, wasn't the only racialized vegan who felt sidelined by the vegan community. Quote, black vegan influencer Tabitha Brown told Vice that before she cut out meat and dairy, she thought vegans were white ladies who do yoga. White people and their blogs dominate the results when key terms like vegans, vegetarians, or vegan recipes are plugged into Google. Well, let's ensure some black women eating spicy Chinese eggplant have bumped up the Google search results, or George Floyd will have died in vain. Wait a second. I thought veganism was about eliminating, as far as practically possible, the use and abuse of animals. The fact that these people are choosing to look at veganism through the lens of race means they have zero care for the actual cause of vegans. It's almost like they sat down and thought, damn white people in there, shuffles deck. Veganism. Cooking and enjoying food from another culture is not cultural appropriation so much as cultural appreciation. But the geniuses at Vice magazine seem to think learning something from another culture and using it yourself is a heinous act of racial oppression. I was actually very close to going vegan, but after reading the article in Vice, I decided to honour my whiteness with another helping of ribs and bacon. Maybe it's a good thing I don't cook any of that foreign rubbish anyway. I'm accidentally woke. Hey, while we're at it, can I tell you a vegan joke? I promise it won't be cheesy. I met this woman yesterday who said she recognized me from a vegan group, but I'd never met her before. Anyway, I do look forward to Vice magazine doing a story on cultural appropriation in things like, you know, pants and air travel and the telephone and the internet and the personal computer and stuff like that. They could start with the cultural appropriation of desktop publishing. British Vogue magazine published an article on August 2nd promoting the idea of a blacks-only university under the heading Anti-Racism, which just goes to show socially acceptable racism is a very one-sided thing. If Vogue journalists suggested a whites-only university, they would be chased through the streets. The article said, and I quote, "In the wake of anti-racism protests the world over, the Black Lives Matter movement has reignited fresh calls to decolonize higher education. Statues of colonists on university campuses are set to be removed, but efforts have not gone far enough. Plans are underway to establish the UK's first ever black university." End quote. Segregation. There's an idea that hasn't been tried before. Maybe apartheid was a good system is not a take I expected from British Vogue in 2020. Why is it that everything progressives do ends up taking us backwards? They love to run full speed ahead in reverse. The article quotes students who complain that there are, quote, not enough black faces on university campuses in the UK. Some might like to suggest to these rocket scientists that with a UK black population of around 4%, there will always be less black faces on campus. That's not racism. That's demographics. The article doesn't say exactly how a black university would work. Perhaps they will use a colour wheel to determine whether young people are black enough to attend. Or maybe they'll play some music and if you dance, you're in. Ultimately, I imagine everything will depend on whether you identified yourself as black or white at the beginning of the year. But if they can't create a black university, maybe these so-called anti-racists could convince universities to start having separate areas for blacks and whites. You know, like separate toilets, separate water fountains, separate seats on buses. It's the future. This is what happens when you don't teach history and consequences. You end up with gold standard woketards. Is it time to replace our elected politicians with non-elected experts? We've always voted representatives into public office, but maybe that's been our problem. They were representative of us. I mean, who among us is an expert, fit to adjudicate on the big questions of life? Surely the past few years have proved that Abraham Lincoln's government of the people, by the people, for the people, should indeed perish from the earth. Increasingly, I wonder if a far better model for society might be government of the people by the knowing. I mean, experts wouldn't have voted for a coalition that gave only lip service to action on climate change, but we did. Experts wouldn't have voted to leave the European Union, but amateurs like us did. And experts would certainly not have made a former reality TV star president, but non-experts inexpertly did. It is surely time to ditch the charade of voting and not to worry ourselves with the views of ourselves, since we keep getting it wrong. And we know we keep getting it wrong because experts keep chiding us for our incompetent choices. It's not that we're bad people, it's just that we're not experts, and so how could we possibly know what's best for ourselves? Should we wear face masks? Yeah, I don't know, but thank God experts do. Would it be smart to let coronavirus spread so we can develop herd immunity? Sounds like a good idea, or maybe not, who knows? The experts will tell us. Can we shake hands? When might we send our children to school or not? Is it okay to visit mum on Mother's Day? Why trouble ourselves with such matters? Better to ask an expert and then follow their expert advice. We have proved this year that following expert advice saves thousands of lives, and we know this is true because experts have told us it's true. Take Queensland as an example. Queensland Chief Health Officer Dr. Janet Young told the Brisbane Times last month that computer modelling predicted 12,000 Queenslanders would die from COVID-19 unless drastic action was taken. How computer modelling comes to us is a mystery, much like how the Quran came to us is a mystery, but like all holy writ, the modelling must never be questioned. Dr. Young said, and I quote, "My advice to the Premier was we have to throw everything at this virus, absolutely everything and anything. I've been really lucky because they've always listened," she said. Now, in fairness to politicians around the world, how could they not listen to experts? To question the modelling, which the media now treat as tablets of stone, is tantamount to blasphemy. So, at the behest of experts, we barricaded the state's borders, hibernated the state's workers, shut down the state's industry, and closed the state's schools. As a result, only 6 Queenslanders have so far died from coronavirus. That's a saving of 11,994 lives. Now, of course, one may ask how we know for sure that turning society upside down and destroying people's livelihoods really saved all those lives. For the answer to that, we've just got to ask the experts. And as it turns out, the experts whose models predicted mass death unless their expert advice was followed are able to confirm that having followed their expert advice, we did in fact avoid mass death. See what I mean about letting experts run things? It just works. Rule by experts can become a little confusing when the experts seem to differ on the advice they give about the pandemic. But thanks to the mainstream media, this problem has largely been solved. Journalists will helpfully ignore anyone whose politics is not obviously left. thereby ensuring we only hear the correct experts. You and I might ask if it's worth decommissioning the entire population and putting everyone under house arrest in order to save an uncertain number of lives. You might ask that question, but you can be sure that you yourself will never be asked that question. When we give ultimate power to those assumed to have ultimate knowledge, we ought not be surprised that our view is ultimately not needed. In a society run by scientists, our role is not to proffer a view. Our role is to obey, confident that experts know best because, well, they wouldn't be experts if they didn't know best, and besides, science. All of which makes me think that perhaps when this crisis is over, we should politely insist that the experts hand back control of our society to those who are meant to represent us, non-experts, unsure of the right answers. Our elected representatives might not know enough to protect us from the plague, but what they don't know will keep them from becoming our superiors. And besides, if they get too expert, we can expertly vote them out. Hey, thanks for being part of the James McPherson Show. I look forward to your company next Tuesday. In the meantime, tonight, if you go to goodsource.news, source is spelt S-A-U-C-E, goodsource.news, tonight, Dave Pellow hosts Pellow Talk. It'll be a great show as he interviews very interesting guests on current affair topics. And of course, tomorrow, if you go to goodsource.news, you can access the Lyle Shelton Show, which is always incredibly informative. But that's all for me for today. Look forward to your company for the James McPherson Show next Tuesday.
The Good Source is amplifying leading conservative voices from Australia and New Zealand. Together, we're providing viewers and listeners, as well as readers, diverse formats and a better source of news and opinions, without the constant victim-oppressor, social justice warrior rhetoric or PC fear of reality. You can help us grow this important initiative by becoming a supporter at goodsource.news today. The James McPherson Show is a production of The Good Source, written and presented by James McPherson. To watch, listen to, or read more media without the SJW narratives or PC fact filter, visit goodsource.news. That's good, SAUCE.news. Become a Good Source supporter for exclusive access to live and unedited interview recordings, including the conversations before and after the show.